Blog Talk Radio.
Will you help rebuild the World House? That's the point. We'll be talking about that in a few minutes. Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination and freedom, which were rooted in our sovereignty. Hey, family, welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversation about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this global machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you prefer to listen on your computer, go to www.liftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. You will then be on Blog Talk Radio site. If you would like to get reminders from Blog Talk Radio for upcoming Dare to Win programs, click on the Follow button. Ulu members, we have our own social media community Please join us if already done so. There is a Dare to Win group, and we would like to have your feedback on past Dare to Win programs, as well as topic suggestions for future programs. I am Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Brother Ankti, who, like me, is a member of Ulu. Peace, Brother Ankti. How are you doing tonight?
Peace, Sister Q. I am well. It's always a pleasure and a privilege to share with our listening audience and with you. And I'm excited, as you know, and I'm sure we'll mention a couple of times during the program tonight, that this weekend, this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, is the ULU annual members meeting and convention. The good news is it's happening virtually, so everyone that can hear us tonight certainly can attend. And we'll get into some of that as we go into the program tonight. But thanks, Sister Q. It's always good to hear you. Always good to be in your company.
It's good to have you, Brother Ankti. So what led you to come up with tonight's topic, Will You Help Rebuild the World House?
That's a great question, Sister Q. I'm just looking at the events that are unfolding all around us. And I was reminded, I also listened to a narrative. It's a program put on by Karen Hunter and Dr. Greg Carr. And they're currently looking at a work by Dr. King, who wrote in 1967, in his Where Do We Go From Here, Chaos or Community? And he said this. He said, this is the great new problem of mankind. We have inherited a large house, a great world house in which we have to live together. And so it just got me thinking about looking at the planet on which we all depend as this world house. And what are we to do? How are we to live together so that everyone has the opportunity to prosper and to flourish and we don't kill ourselves? And that was the question that Dr. King raised in 1967. Where do we go from here, chaos or community? It seems that we are far more comfortable with chaos, and apparently building healthy, vibrant communities is a much bigger challenge for us. But nonetheless, that's what we must do. And so that was the background, Sister Q, for that particular topic tonight. As I was thinking about this term world house, you know, we in ULU are focused like a laser light, like a laser beam, on the economics in our community. How do we regain control? How do we control the economics of our community? And in thinking about that, I looked at the etymology of the word economy, and it derives from the Greek language, and it means to manage the house or household. What we are really talking about is the management of material resources, the management of the natural resources of the planet, and the healthy organization of human societies so they can live peacefully on Earth. The deeper meaning of economics goes way beyond just dollars and cents, currencies, and banking institutions. When we really think about it, economics encompasses the totality of life. And I'm excited that ULU exists as an organization to focus our attention on economics. How do we become more adept, more skillful, and how do we operate in the economic arena in a way that is beneficial for us and our children? Go ahead.
No, I wanted to, speaking on the etymology that you gave for the word economy, we throw the word around all the time. And we hear people throwing the word around all the time, and most of us don't stop to think exactly what the word means. What is it talking about? So I'm glad that you brought that to our attention, because it gives another way to look at it instead of just thinking about it in terms of, you know, how many dollars do I have, or how is this currency related to the next currency? Is this, you know, other kind of currency better than the one I have? All of those things. It really has to do with your very life and being on this planet at this time.
Right. It's very profound, Sister Q, when we delve into it. The economy actually works like the ground that we stand on. We don't think about it a lot, or we think about it only in very superficial ways. But the economy is the foundation that organizes and arranges everything that happens on the planet. And the politics is just the means of controlling who decides what. But that's the second step. The first thing is the foundation. And so when we talk about economy, we're talking about what is the founding values and principles that these people operate on. And so ULU is working overtime to enlarge our economic horizons. We must raise our focus from just, as you pointed out, wanting a good job or wanting to become a millionaire or billionaire. We see ourselves maybe on a Shark Tank. But all of that is operating within the framework of a very sick and a disintegrating economic model called capitalism. So as the first inhabitants of the planet, I think, many of us in ULU think, that the Creator has made us the stewards of this world house. We have a critical role to play, and we have to be in the leadership of how this world house is managed. And this is key. Each of us, every one of us, has a task, an assignment, a duty to perform in restoring our world house. You know, Sister Q, you may have had this experience. Oftentimes when we don't have a lot of money or the bank account is low and we're scratching our heads trying to figure out how we're going to pay bills and the money's not there, it tends to put us on the sidelines and we tend to watch events unfold as spectators in the stands. And so when the discussion turns to economics, we don't necessarily see ourselves in that conversation because we don't have a business or we don't have great wealth to make decisions and be prominent that people listen to. We think too often that based on our bank accounts, that's about the amount of voice that we have on the planet. And even when we see things going south and going sideways and disintegrating, we're still waiting for someone else to come along with the solution to fix it. I want to suggest ULU's position is each and every one of us is a steward, and we are responsible for what happens in the world house. If somebody next to us is clowning, it's up to us to correct that. If someone else is misguided and doing things that are detrimental to the welfare of the house, then we have to step up and say, no, there's a better way to do that. And so the first thing that I wanted to kind of focus on in our conversation tonight, Sister Q, hopefully was to reorient us to understanding that this is our house. We have as much right to be up in here as anybody else. And the condition of the house, if it's not right for us, then it's on us to do something about that. We're not waiting for someone else to come in here with a light bulb answer. We are going to look within ourselves, within our own history, within our own traditions, and we're going to reframe the systems and the institutions that are standing up on our sidewalk and replace them with institutions that make sense and that actually work for the majority, for the masses of our people. I'm going to say this. We'll get into it a little bit more in detail. But if we just, well, you can't avoid it. If you looked at the news in the last 3 or 4 days, 5 days, and you've seen the events that are unfolding in Ukraine, these are just average, ordinary, go-to-work, everyday people who now neighborhoods are being bombed. Soldiers and tanks are moving up and down their streets, and they're having to flee for their lives with just the clothes on their back. So,
no doubt,
when we understand that the systems are disintegrating, just because things are okay on your block today doesn't mean that we can sleep and pretend like this isn't going to affect us sooner or later. So the question that I would ask, that I'm asking in the conversation tonight, Sister Q, is, will you be one of the ones that help to take responsibility for rebuilding our world house? It's not a rhetorical question. What we're really asking is, there's a role and a work for each and every person listening to this broadcast. And the question is, will you put your energy with us to rebuild the world house so that there's a future for us and for our children? So I'll pause there, Sister Q.
Yes, that's a very good way that you phrased that, because we tend to think that we have to be, you know, big shots in order to make a difference, or that we have to have a large following, or what, you know, whatever is going on there. And really, it's just a matter of each man, woman, child doing what their assignment is, or what the Creator gave them as their spark. So just know your spark and apply it for us. You know, a lot of us take our spark to somebody else's community and wonder why we are not recognized. And part of it, I think, is because we're in the wrong place. Even though we might be doing the right thing, we're not doing it where it was assigned for us to do, I would say. So I'm glad that you brought that up.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah. So if anyone would like to join the conversation, please call. I can't think of the number. Please call 929-477-2789 and press the number 1 on your phone, and then we'll recognize you, and you can ask your questions or make comments. Thank you. Okay, Brother Auntie, right now we don't have any hands up, so we can continue with what you want to talk about. Do you want to go ahead and say the advertisement for tomorrow and talk about the register at this point, since that's basically our call to rebuild the world house?
I think that's a good idea. Let's do that.
Okay, so I'm going to make the commotion.
Greetings.
Greetings, Brother Auntie. Habaragani, what's the news?
Kuji Chagalia, how are you doing today?
I'm well. How about you?
I'm so glad you called. Let me tell you about a very important event happening for ULU members. Did you know that the annual ULU members meeting and convention is coming up soon?
No, I hadn't heard. Tell me more.
Well, as you know, Us Lifting Us is the premier global economic cooperative community for people of African descent.
Mm-hmm.
Collectively, we're building successful business models that give us capacity to gain significant control of the economics of our community.
Yes, I know. And I agree wholeheartedly about this approach to nation building. Tell me more about the annual members meeting and convention.
This year's meeting will be virtual again due to COVID-19, but we're planning a live online event for members to interact with each other, get to know each other, and get to know more about the ULU plan and some important recent initiatives like real estate and cryptocurrency.
Sounds exciting. I want to be there. What do I need to do?
Simply go to usliftingus.com, and that is USLIFTINGUS.com, and register there. And if you're interested in becoming a sponsor for the convention, you can sign up there as well.
That sounds easy enough to do. I'm on it right now.
And all ULU members can do that right now. Show your support for ULU. Register now at
usliftingus.com.
That's
usliftingus.com.
Okay, so if you are wanting to register, you still have time. You can go to the convention. Once you get to usliftingus.com, there's a convention page. So your present members can register using the email address that ULU has on record for you. There is no code necessary. You will receive confirmation and meeting access information as soon as you register. If you're a non-member, you can also register on the website, and you will receive confirmation and meeting access information immediately. If you're a non-member, there are certain parts of the meetings that you will not be able to attend, so you'll have different information. New members, you can register. You can become a member and then register right away. So you can register with the personalized code that you'll receive via email when you register, and you will receive your confirmation and meeting address, meeting access information immediately. Also, Brother Auntie, are they still taking sponsor applications since the...
They're taking sponsorships at the $100 level only. So they want to, we certainly welcome that and would love to, for them to also come in as a $100 sponsor.
Okay. All right. So you heard that, folks. You still have time to, if you're not a member, you have time to join and register. If you are a member, you have time to register. And if you want to be a sponsor, you have time to do that too. So, continuing with the conversation, mm-hmm. Brother.
Thank you, Sister Q. And yes, family, by all means, do go to the website, usliftingus.com. You'll see the annual meeting page and information. Please register and join the conversation. That's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Starts Friday tomorrow at 12 noon. There will be people on the call from Ghana and the Caribbean, as well as across the United States, also in the UK, and it's a good family meeting where we can talk about this important work of building an economy that works for the majority of the world's people. We began this conversation tonight, Sister Q, focused a little bit on Dr. King's question.
Before you go further, we have someone with a question, so let's take that, and then you can run after.
Okay. Okay.
after we take this question or comment. Peace caller with the last four digits 3440. Please state your name, where you're calling from, make your comment or ask your question. Thank you.
Greetings. Can you hear me, Sister Q?
Yes, I can.
All right. Greetings to you and Brother Auntie. Very good discussion and conversation going. This is Brother Shabak calling from Southern Florida, the Sunshine State, and I just had a thought as you were going through it. Two significant things happened, and I'd like you to put it, if you can, in the context of your discussion. At the end of February, just around the time that Russia supposedly invaded Ukraine, the United States was attacking in Somalia al-Shabaab, supposedly. I'd like you to hook that up. And just today, in fact, just at a press conference today, President Biden signed an executive order to regulate cryptocurrency, which a number of people said it has now reached a $3 trillion market, and it's going to authorize the Treasury to begin steps towards regulation. I'll hang up and listen to your comments and put it in the context of what you were speaking about today, and I really appreciate that conversation going on. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brother Shabak.
Thank you, Brother Shabak. You mentioned you're in the Sunshine State. It was decent today. It's getting chilly, though. But your question goes to the heart of this matter of chaos or community, and that's a very real question. And let me speak to your first part of your question in terms of the invasion in Somalia, and also the situation in the Ukraine. The Russian invasion of Ukraine, or as you put it, the so-called invasion of Ukraine, at its root is a fight between American capitalists, American and NATO capitalists, and Russian oligarch capitalists. It is not a war between American democracy and Russian communism. Hear me. European-style socialism and communism collapsed in the former USSR, that is the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, in December of 1991. What Russia is today is oligarch and capitalist. When this former Soviet Union collapsed, those nationalized industry, and a lot of them in petro and chemicals, were taken over by Putin's buddies. And they, instead of them being operated on behalf of the workers in those socialist republics, they were converted into capitalist businesses, privately owned and controlled, and they made multi-billionaires out of a small class of business people in Russia who now control the politics of Russia. And so what we are witnessing is a fight among different factions of the capitalist group. And that that incursion into Somalia, again, is the United States asserting itself militarily so it can control and remain in hegemony over the African continent, because it is concerned about China forming relationships on the African continent, and it sees itself having to shore up its control over the African continent. So the point that we simply want to make is that the smoldering wreckage of these Ukrainian cities resulting from the Russian bombing is a precursor of what the world will look like if we allow capitalistic wars to continue to escalate, and surely they will. So what we're seeing, Brother Shabaka, is that they tell us that, you know, this is a fight for democracy and freedom and all that. But what this is a struggle for which faction of capitalists are going to control the global economy. And we have to understand that what happens to people who are not in a position to protect themselves, they wind up being trampled upon, and they become these refugees who have to depend on the goodwill of the countries that they flee to because their own homelands have been ruined. And we've seen that across the African continent. We're witnessing it in real time in Libya, a formerly stable country whose literacy rate was 98% has been reduced to multiple warring factions and just destroyed the social infrastructure of that country, all in the interest of keeping American hegemony in place. So that's part of the chaos that we're witnessing. The other thing is the mismanagement of the corona pandemic by Trump in America and Prime Minister Boris Johnson in the UK is another glaring example of capitalist inability to effectively manage the affairs of the global world house. And the other point that I would mention is the absolute, utter, and complete failure of Western capitalism to address global warming may prove to be the straw that breaks the camel's back and unleashes the full fury of Mother Nature against the human species. So, Brother Shabaka, to your point, both about Somalia, Ukraine, cryptocurrency, these are capitalist factions maneuvering to make sure that they control the economy of the planet, even though their control is resulting in misery and suffering and death for millions and millions and millions of people. And we have been spectators of this game for far too long. The last time the European cousins fell out, it resulted in World War II. And millions of people died in that conflagration. These people have no qualms when it comes to going to war. They thrive in this war environment. We could say a lot more about that. The fact that they now have nuclear weapons at their disposal certainly raises the ante significantly. But what it shows is that they do not have a clue in terms of how do we pivot from this chaos, this war, this exploitation, this extraction economy to a sane and renewable and sustainable future. The only viable solution to the planetary crisis staring us in the face is to rebuild the world house on a completely new foundation. Really, Sister Q, what we're talking about is we got to have a revolution. You know, okay. We've kind of gotten away from that term. But revolution as opposed to reform, when you reform, that's just like, well, you know, Trump goes out, Biden comes in. Trump comes back in, who knows what else may happen. But you're just playing around the edges. In terms of the real a problem in the room, that is capitalism, that hasn't been touched. And even though it's decaying right in front of our eyes, no one wants to talk about the fact that we have got to get rid of this system. So when we talk about rebuilding the world house on a new foundation, what's at the root of why this system is so demonic and so ungodly is because it is based on the values of materialism, individualism, and a hyper-individualism at that, a manic competition, and violent domination of everything moving. That's it. Now, that is the values that undergirds this culture. We, on the other hand, have been advocating and continue to advocate for the values of Ma'at, truth, justice, righteousness, order, balance, harmony, and reciprocity. For the Nguza Saba, unity, self-determination, collective work and responsibility, cooperative economics, purpose, creativity, faith. These are living values. The problem is they only can stand up and be concretized inside of an economic model. You can't have truth in the midst of capitalism. Everybody lies. And if Trump did us a favor by showing us how glaring the problem is, I mean, he'd lie right in front of your face. And so we live in a society that it's just understood that everybody lies. You can't build healthy community when no one tells the truth. But until you change the economic foundation, that's what you're going to have. So what is the new global economic order? And for us, and why we're excited about the ULU conference this weekend, Ujamaa, group-owned, family-centered, African values-based, global cooperative. And what we mean by that is, and the two things are exciting to me about this, Sister Q. A, we don't have to ask Elon Musk, can we do this? We don't have to have Jeff Bezos in the room to do this. We don't need Zuckerberg putting in money to do this. We have the resources in our own hands to build these economic enterprises and institutions ourselves. And as a matter of fact, if we don't build them ourselves, they won't be ours, and they won't work the way we need them to work, and we know they can work. And so when we say group-owned, for example, and one of the reasons we're particularly excited about this year's annual meeting, as Brother Shabaku certainly recognizes, Sister Q, is that we're going to present to the membership a resolution about enhancing the structure of ULU to make it more robust and to shield it more from the possibilities of bogus lawsuits coming at us once they begin to realize that we're serious, and that if we really get this up and running, it's game over, lights out, and we'll build a new day in this country. And so when we say group owned, that's what exactly we mean. When you come into ULU, there's two fees involved. There's a $50 annual membership fee, and we pay that each year. It's an administrative fee. And then we encourage each and every member to purchase a co-op unit of $1,000. You don't have to purchase the co-op unit all at once. You may not have $1,000 just sitting around and you say, hey, well, here, take this. Or you might. You might have several for that matter. But what we say is pay on it over time. But the idea is that for every 1,000 members who purchase a co-op unit of $1,000, that's $1 million. And we have the capacity to generate multi-million dollar, billion dollar enterprises without anyone else's help. We have $1.3 trillion flowing through our hands on an annual basis. Just a fraction of that could easily generate business opportunities and enterprises that are handling billions of dollars that we redirect to, for example, things like African-centered schools, community health care that's based on holistic practices and natural practices, elder care that's based on a genuine respect for our elders, in addition to quarterly or semi-annual dividends back to the membership as a result of the surplus value generated by these businesses. I'm asking people to imagine their neighborhoods where all of the businesses that they need, from the grocery store to the dry cleaner to the clothing outlets, to the automobile service places, to the internet things that they purchase. All of that is owned by Ulu Cooperative, so that mm-hmm. every time they put a dollar on the counter, it turns over 10, 15, 20 times in our community before it leaves. And it multiplies right. the wealth in our community. All you have to do is contrast that with what we've got in our community right now. We go to a grocery store, Kroger takes that out. You go to the mall, all of those businesses are extraction. They take the money out, the money doesn't come back. And so we have to build our own businesses. And the difference is that rather than these businesses being privately owned, they're group owned. In other words, we own the businesses. So all of that surplus value stays with us. This is being done in other parts of the world right now. This is mm-hmm. not something that we just thought of. We actually studied working models of this being done in Spain, being done in Italy. And this was certainly the vision of Julius Nyerere when he wrote Ujamaa na Uhuru, freedom and familyhood, because that's what Ujamaa means at its roots. It's familyhood, familyhood that generates an economy, because at the base of it all, we have to do commerce like we love each other. You know, we have to stop exactly. seeing each other as marks or as a target or seeing dollar signs on people and trying to figure out how am I going to separate this woman from her money?
Exactly.
How am I going to exploit these children for some money? Mm-hmm. You know, how am I going to turn out these girls and turn them into prostitutes? All of the things that come with capitalist culture is the crisis that is surrounding us. And the thing that allows us to break through that is when we open these group-owned businesses and then we profit together from them. That's certainly what Dr. Karenga had in mind when he wrote the definition for Ujamaa. We just didn't take it far enough to understand that what we had to do was to create cooperatives rather than private enterprises. Let me pause there. There may be some questions, comments.
There are no one has their hand up right now, but what I would like to add to what you were saying is we are talking about building institutions. When we say family-owned cooperatives, we're talking about the global African family. We have historically had African-owned businesses or family-owned businesses, and in many instances, the founding member of the business, when they passed away or when they no longer wanted to run the business, we lost the business. Someone else bought it up. It ceased to be. It might still have the name, but it doesn't. It's no longer a Black-owned business. So I think the Ulu model helps prevent that from happening because the business is owned by the group. So we pick it up and keep it going, you know.
That's right. You're absolutely right. Rather than just a sole proprietorship or a business that's run by one family, what Ulu is building are institutions. These are economic enterprises that are owned by the community.
Yeah.
They're owned by hundreds and thousands of people. And so what we have to become good at, Sister Q, is succession planning. How do we, you know, change the board of directors and how do we enhance the institution year after year after year so it continues to expand And we never worry about it not being around for future generations. If we're living and breathing, then the institutions are living and breathing as well. And I guess the point that I want to make sure that is clear tonight is the fact that we have the capacity to do this.
Mm-hmm.
This is not rocket science. We have been bamboozled oftentimes by the media and people who come the talking heads who come before us with these PhDs in economics and these charts and, you know, making it sound like you have to be Einstein to make sense of how do you do global economics. Nothing could be
right.
further from the truth. And so we have already established the cooperative. That's what ULU is, Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative. It is the primary cooperative machine or institution, if you will, that then gives birth to secondary cooperatives, whether that's a consumer cooperative, something akin to a Walmart, whether it's a clothing operation, whether it's a shoe manufacturing process, whether it's an energy sector business, whatever needs we have as a people, we have the talent and the resources to put together these businesses that can meet our needs and create jobs that we don't even have to talk about a living wage because they're going to pay well above a living wage.
Right.
And at the same time, they're going to give a dividend periodically to the workers as a bonus. They're going to generate sufficient surplus that we can underwrite the education of our children without having to beg other folks who then come in and miseducate them. And all you have to do is stick your head inside of any public school room in America today, and you'll see that miseducation going on, in a scale that will blow your mind. It's just interesting when we as a people in this country were faced first by the corona pandemic and now the Ukraine situation, how little information the average person has on these subjects. And that's because the educational system was designed to keep us ignorant of the basic information necessary to make decisions in the 21st century.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so here we are facing global warming, and we're seeing these severe weather impacts. We can't even have an intelligent conversation about how do we get off of fossil fuel, because everybody has been brainwashed into thinking that the people who run Exxon know more than the person down the street.
Uh-huh.
It's all a con game. And
right.
I think one of the things that the corona pandemic has done is pull some of the covers back. You know, people start looking and asking questions. They say, no, that don't make sense. That's not right. But now there's just confusion. And so what we have to understand is that the confusion is because these are competing capitalist systems trying to stay in power. They don't care anything about the people. So if a million people died in the country from corona, tough. If they decide that things in Ukraine get so intense that they have to drop nuclear weapons on people, nuclear bombs on people, some people are going to get, you know, are going to get hit mm-hmm. with nuclear bombs.
Yeah.
Right? There's no conscience when it comes to the sanctity of life. And that should scare everybody.
Well, the plan is to heavily depopulate the planet. So whatever story they have to tell to get people to go along with the plan, they'll tell it. It's like you said, they have no problem with making up stuff. So
that's so true.
So we can discern the truth no matter what they say. We can work. One of the things I wanted to, Brother Shibaka brought up the cryptocurrency situation. And I saw a story about it. I didn't really go into detail about President Biden. But the thing is that the cryptocurrency, to my understanding, is decentralized. So it is no controlling it or regulating it as they desire to do. Do you know anything about that?
Well, the thing that makes cryptocurrency so fascinating, and let me do this first. Let me mention, first of all, for those who are on the call and are not familiar with GUAP coin, G-U-A-P, I would invite you to go to guapcoin.com look at that website. It's a sister by the name of Tavanya Evans, who has 20 years in the IT industry, and in 2017 developed GUAP coin, which is a black cryptocurrency. And now to your point, Sister Q, the thing that makes cryptocurrency so powerful is that it is decentralized. It gets average people off of the central banking mechanisms and institutions and allows for what is called peer-to-peer transactions. In other words, you do a service for me and, I pay you in GUAP coin or vice versa. So it doesn't go through Chase Bank or Wells Fargo or any of those heavily controlled banking institutions or even the Federal Reserve for that matter. It's just a way of transferring value based on you deciding who has provided something of value to you. The thing that makes it work, called blockchain, that's a digital ledger that keeps track of every transaction. So it takes trust out of the equation because the blockchain is the trust factor. You can see all the transactions and you know exactly what the worth is of the currency in any moment in time. And that's the piece that shakes up these countries that want to rely on central banking systems as a way of controlling people's behavior, because all the people have to do is threaten your job or your livelihood, and they figure that that's all it's going to take to keep you in line. But when you have access to cryptocurrency, then that power goes away. And so they know that the dollar is vulnerable, and sooner or later may not be as much of an instrument on the global scene as it has been in past years. And so cryptocurrency is filling that vacuum. For me personally, Sister Q, I had invested in the GUAP coin because, this is a black currency, and it made sense. It's doing very well. But it's the idea of here's the thing. We've got a co-op, right? Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative is a co-op. So we're opening businesses that are group-owned, right? When it comes time to pay the workers, right now, we're going to pay them in dollars. So whoever controls the dollars still has a hand in our business. Suppose we start paying our work is in Guapcoin or cryptocurrency.
Uh-huh.
That opens up a whole new possibility. And when we look at the African continent, every so-called independent African country, none of them have their own currency. Or if they have a currency, it's tied to either the franc, the German mark, the American dollar, or the British pound.
Uh-huh.
You see what I'm saying? So
right.
Their independence is only they're only as independent as their former colonial masters say they are.
For sure.
And that's the power of the central banks to control the economic life of our people around the globe. But
mm-hmm.
all of this is coming together at the most opportune time, and it's an exciting time for all of us to be alive. So the key is A, for us to constantly be reading and researching and gaining new information and new knowledge, and then becoming active agents of our own liberation. That's why, to me, ULU is so exciting. It is a vehicle, it is a mechanism, it is an institution that's owned and controlled by African people, period, full stop. End of conversation. And if we don't do this, then we have no reason to complain about, you know, what this person did or didn't do and yada, yada, yada. We have it within our own means at this point. We've got the cooperative mechanisms. We've got a black digital cryptocurrency as a currency. And
mm-hmm.
we've got the entire African continent and the diasporic Africans in Europe and the Caribbean and the United States. The global marketplace is sitting there for us to invade and take over.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that limits us is lack of imagination.
Right.
And I sense that the ancestors are working right now to change all of that.
No doubt. So it's almost time for us to go, Brother Auntie. What would you like to make sure the family takes away from this evening's discussion?
Thank you. And I'm glad you brought me back down to earth. very simply, we've got some business decisions to make in the ULU annual meeting this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And If people listening tonight take away only one thing, I want them to take away the information that ULU is the place where the African family can come together and make strategic decisions about what our future will look like and what we will pass on to our children. In this meeting that's going on this weekend, we have to make a decision about some restructuring of the ULU model. We have to make some decisions about real estate investments that are on the table. We've got business to handle. And
mm-hmm.
this is a platform where one person, one vote. Sister Q, you may have 100 shares, 100 co-op units. I may only have 2. But when we
mm-hmm.
sit down to do the business, you have one vote. I have one vote. We are equal. That is genuine democracy. But we're even a little bit more sophisticated than that. We strive for a consensus. But the idea is that everyone in ULU is equal. Now, if this was Exxon Corporation or Coca-Cola, for example, if I owned 5,000 shares of Coca-Cola stock and you owned 100 shares of Coca-Cola stock, when it came time to vote, I would vote my 5,000 shares over your 100 shares, and I would win. Because
no
that's
doubt.
How those corporations are set up. It's not
mm-hmm.
one person, one vote. It's the shares.
One share,
in
one
cooperative, in ULU, it's about one person, one vote. And so we are inviting our family to come together with us in a democratic environment to think strategically, to think deeply about how we rebuild the World House. This is not a theoretical activity that we're engaged in. We are doing concrete steps to build institutions that we can pass on to our children. It's the most exciting time in our history to be alive, and the ancestors are on their tiptoes encouraging us to take ourselves seriously and do this. The world is waiting on us, and everything is ripe for us to launch and to not only provide these institutions for ourselves, but to provide the leadership that the entire world has been waiting for, because they know their systems are bankrupt and falling apart.
Yeah.
That's what I would leave with our audience and family to hear tonight, Sister Q.
Thank you for that, Brother. And thank you for all the information you shared with us this evening. We also want to thank everyone who joined us on the call this evening. We want to invite you to join us in the meeting this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and then come join us again next Thursday evening at 9 o'clock for another installment of Dare to Win. And with that, I will say,
community recognizes that our people's creativity takes many forms throughout the convention.
Two from the good.